Don't Depend on Daddy is an unfiltered safe space, empowering young professionals to build independence in their 20s and beyond, whether it be personal, professional, or financial. Regardless of your age, relationship status, or job title, the most consistent person in your life is you. So join me and let's build our independence together. Enjoy! Hello and welcome back to Don't Depend on Daddy, the podcast. My name is Michaela. I am your host. And on this week's episode, I am joined by Lauren McGoodwin. She is the founder of Korea Contessa, and she has so much knowledge and really, really practical advice when it comes to navigating your career. A quick little background on Lauren. She founded Korea Contessa in 2013 after experiencing a gap in career development resources for women who might be job searching, soul searching, leading, managing, or trying to find new ways to advance within their careers. Prior to founding Korea Contessa, which I'm not even going to tell you how many times it took me to just say this first sentence, Korea Contessa. Say Korea Contessa five times fast. Prior to doing that, Lauren was a university recruiter for Hulu focused on hiring, employer branding, and program management. She has a bachelor's in education from the University of Oregon and a master's in communication management from USC, University of Southern California, where she wrote her thesis on millennials in career resources. She's also the author of Power Moves, How Women Can Pivot, Reboot, and Build a Career of Purpose. I'm super excited for you to listen to this episode because we cover so many things, and Lauren is honestly such a practical, level-headed voice in the career space. We talk about lessons that she learned throughout her career, practical advice for navigating a career quarter-life crisis. She has a very, very, very similar opinion, perspective as me when it comes to whether or not your dream job exists, which as a disclaimer, it does not. We also talk about how to become invaluable in the workplace rather than indispensable, because there is a difference, how to create boundaries, and then we end with some rapid fire questions. So I'm super excited for you to listen to the rest of this episode. Before we get into it, we're going to go through our usual housekeeping. So first things first, as always, you can use the code podcast1 for $10 off the personal finance dashboard. If you are new on your financial journey, you can enroll in my financial planning email course. It's completely free. All you have to do that is download the financial plan checklist, which is linked in the show notes. On that topic, I also, as of Monday of this week, March 11th, have recently launched a new chat funnel thing. So within my DMs on Instagram, I'm really excited about it. So you can also DM me the word budget and you will get sent my personal finance starter kit, which is also totally free. So feel free to do that if you're interested. Beyond that, if you haven't ordered Own Your Money, here is your reminder to do so. You can also listen to it for free if you are listening to this with Spotify Premium. And if you want to come join the Break Your Budget Inner Circle, please do. We host money reviews every Monday afternoon. This past week on today, March 11th, when I'm recording this intro, we had a Investing for Retirement Masterclass with Rachel Aguirre from BlackRock. Really, really awesome. So if you join the Inner Circle, you can go and watch the replay. You're also welcome to spend $10 for 1 month, join the Inner Circle, watch the replays, and then cancel if you want. You will not hurt my feelings. So that resource exists if you want it. And that's all the housekeeping for this week. I'm going to skip the Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week, just because honestly, I don't really have one. I went skiing last week and I made it back alive. So we are happy about that. And also I did want to say thank you for the positive feedback based on last week's episode. I did get a few DMs. I realized on my Don't Depend on Daddy Instagram that I had a bunch of messages sitting in my message requests that like I wasn't notified that I had. So if you message me on there, I am sorry if I've never replied to you. It's because I just saw them today for the first time. And I've had this Instagram all year long. So I love that for me. But thank you to everyone who has left me a kind review or, you know, reached out to me to say that they enjoyed the podcast. It does mean a lot to me. If you listened to last week's episode, you know that the negative reviews have been starting to get to me. I do try to tune out the noise, but I think it's important to be honest and say that like getting criticized and negative feedback all the time, every day, it doesn't feel good. And I think there's this whole narrative on creators that like we need to tune out the noise. And I get that. But at the same time, we also need to bring back shame and remind people who are being negative and bringing that negativity into someone's space that it's not okay. It's not cool. And it hurts people's feelings. So all that to say, I really appreciate the people who enjoy the show, who listen every week, who consume my content, and who actually support me. And if you are a silent hater, respectfully, turn this off. So with that, let's get into the rest of this episode with Lauren. I think you're going to love it. Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Can you share a little bit about who you are and your career journey?
Sure. Well, my name is Lauren McGoodwin. I'm the founder and CEO of Career Contessa, which is a professional development resource for women. We help women who are job searching, looking to advance at work, learn new skills, salary negotiation, or just really learning more about salaries in general. It's kind of a one-stop shop resource. Prior to running Career Contessa, I was a recruiter at Hulu. Prior to that, I worked in higher education. And so I always tell people the common theme among my careers is I really love helping people figure out what they want to do career-wise and just build a fulfilling career. I also have a podcast called Career Contessa, and I wrote a book called Power Moves, How Women Can Pivot, Reboot, and Build a Career of Purpose. So just, you know, trying to check as many boxes as I can.
Cool. Okay. I'm so excited to read your book. I am going to order a copy right after this because I'm in my like career era right now. Over the last year, I've been diving deep on like career lessons from my own life and really trying to also become more of a career resource because my corporate career was a little bit tumultuous. And I feel like so many people have experienced that. And so I'm really excited to talk to you about your career journey a little bit more and mostly some lessons that you've learned. So how about we start here with a little bit of wisdom? If you could go back and tell like your 25-year-old self some career advice, what would you say?
Oh, that's good. I think one of the things I wish I knew earlier in my career is learn how to be a really good storyteller. I was prioritizing other skill sets, probably more hard skills, you know, like how to, you know, make X amount of recruiter calls and learn how to source and screen. I wish I had learned that storytelling is incredibly important. So data in, story out. So I wish I had learned better communication or like effective communication skills, because no one is listening to you unless you deliver it in a way that they can hear it. Doesn't matter how amazing that PowerPoint is or the presentation. So that's definitely something I wish I had learned a little earlier. And the other one I love is, I'm sure you guys have heard of this phrase, but like the advice of like swallow the frog. It's the concept of like do something you don't like doing first thing in the morning. I would apply it a little differently in that find something that maybe your boss or your manager or someone who has some influence of your career doesn't love doing and see how you can kind of get in there and help them out. So like, don't worry if it's not your job or in your job description, but like, can you quote swallow the frog for somebody else and help make their life easier? There's a phrase related to this, like servant leadership, which I know everyone's like, no, I don't want that. And I don't mean like, you know, be a people pleaser and a doormat and let everyone walk on you. But I mean like trying to work in service of other people, especially the people who have influence over your career. You know, whether we like these realities or not, that kind of stuff can be really valuable in your career. And I was very much like, this is my job description. This is the box. And now I realize like the job title / description is just a starting point. It doesn't actually mean that much.
100%. I think that was the biggest issue that I had in my corporate career, because I worked a corporate job for about 5 years. And I think the biggest problem that I faced was that I was so siloed within what was in the scope of my job description because I didn't want to be doing extra work. And I feel like you can go quote unquote above and beyond without necessarily creating a ton of extra work for yourself. It's really thinking about how is what you are doing going to impact other people.
Yeah.
And I always say that, like, it's so important when you are thinking about the work that you do and the value you bring to the table to think about the impact of everything that you touch. Who is it going to? How is that serving the business? How is it serving other people? Is where you bring value in your career. So I really love that advice. And on the topic of the first one, I find it so interesting that you say more like soft skills, I think, are more, not more valuable, but I think require more attention as opposed to hard skills, because as part of my career book that I have coming out this summer, I talked to a bunch of executives. So like C-suite executives, entrepreneurs who built like these really big businesses, to get advice from them on what would you tell your younger self as someone who's like, or people who have been in the working world for 40 plus years. And they all said the exact same thing. They said they would much rather hire, train, and focus on a young professional who has grit, who's willing to be communicative, who has, you know, maybe some influence in their social circle or within the social circle at work, as opposed to like the smartest person in the room with the hardest skills. And I think that goes to show how important people skills are, and that people hire people. And that is really where the value, again, in your career sort of starts. It's not to say skills aren't important, but soft skills are very important, more important than people think. Okay, so I have a few more questions for you. First being, recommendations to someone who is navigating some sort of quarter life crisis. So I think this is something that a lot of young adults sort of face when they hit that 24 to 27 age range, where it's like, okay, I've been working in my job after college for a couple of years, and now I'm not super happy here, and like, oh my God, I hate what I'm doing. What advice would you give to them to navigate that kind of pivot?
Well, first, I would say this is very, very normal. I actually interviewed a woman who wrote a book called The Quarter Life Crisis. Was it Quarter? It's called Quarter Life, I think. It's a fantastic book. But the point being is that this is very, very typical. And I felt like this is actually where the idea for Career Contessa came about, because I was working, I was unhappy. You have this sort of like expectation hangover of like, I expected kind of work and career and life to sort of go one way. And my book talks a lot about this too. Like many of us sort of feel like the path of fulfillment is supposed to be this 1+1=2 formula. And when it doesn't, the math ain't mathin', and we don't know what to do, right? And so this is totally normal for you to have this experience and be like, I was expecting this. What's going on? It must be something wrong with me. I must need to change myself. And the reality is that going through school is so much different than going through work. And so give yourself some grace, the fact that you have made this huge life transition and you almost in a way weren't prepared for it at all. And so now you almost have to do a lot of inner working versus getting the right grades, getting into the right college, all this external stuff. It's like you actually have to do all this internal stuff to figure out what it is career-wise that will work for you. And also, there's no such thing as a dream career. I am a huge proponent of, like, I like calling it like a good enough job. I don't like saying dream job. I think it sets you up for sort of this like hamster wheel of trying to, again, focus on external things that look good on LinkedIn and on Instagram. And what the reality is, I actually interviewed this woman. I said, what are the drivers of happiness and fulfillment in a career? And she said, autonomy, relationships, and purpose. And so I think what happens is when you are starting out in your career, you don't know to look for those things. You don't know how to prioritize those things. So again, first, practice some self-compassion and understand the difference between self-compassion and self-esteem. One is going to serve you much better in the long term than trying to be the most confident person in the room. If you're the person who can be the kindest and the person who learns from your kindest to yourself, I should say, and like looks at it through a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, all those are going, that's going to serve you. So practice self-compassion, understand how to embrace that fixed mindset. The second part of this is stop believing that the dream job exists and that you are going to just work your ass off until you get it. And if not, you're going to punish yourself until you have it. That is absolutely doesn't exist. And a lot of times the dream job, what I find out when I'm talking to people, is actually more about this dream lifestyle. So we all have to be very careful about those things. And then the next thing, number three, I would say, I caution you from turning yourself into this like human DIY experiment. Instead, let's start small. So my whole book, Power Moves, is about how to take a proactive approach to your career versus a reactive approach. So find the things that you can control in your career and let's focus on those things. Sometimes they're really small, like reaching out to someone at your company to have a networking coffee with. Sometimes they're quote, medium power moves, where it's, okay, I'm going to actually invest some money to take an online course on this thing that I really want, or I'm going to get an Audible subscription so I can walk and listen, you know, learn via books. Then you're going to work your way up to those bigger power moves, which is applying for a new job, quitting your current job, things like that. So if you are in that quarter life crisis, start with sort of this three-step approach, but I know people want more like concrete, tangible advice about how do I figure out my next career move. And it's like, there's no crystal ball out there. What I can tell you is that clarity comes from engagement. So engage with the world around you, have those informational interviews, talk to the people who are doing jobs that you think are interesting. See if you can understand what is it that is really interesting to me. You might think it's this thing, but after having six different conversations and informational interviews, almost in my book, I call it a listening tour. Go on a listening tour to listen and find out what it is that you're really looking for. And that will just help you, again, feel like you're in more control of proactively designing your career toward a direction that is going to be more fulfilling for you. And if all else fails, prioritize relationships, autonomy, and purpose. You know, where can you go where you're going to have some of that stuff? You might work in an office, but you have autonomy over a project, or maybe autonomy over your hours is really important, even though you're in an office. So like even when I was a recruiter, we used to say this to people when we would start to negotiate offers, like, what are the top three most important things to you to get out of your job? Because similar to house hunting, you're probably not going to get all of them unless you have an unlimited budget, right? It's the same thing in your career. And unless you are just this magician where every job in the world is perfect for you and you have your choice, you are going to have to prioritize and then kind of double down on the things that you want the most. And so I think the quarter life crisis is really a mixture of kind of, like I said, giving yourself some grace, resetting your expectations of really managing those, and then controlling what you can control and putting some power back into your life that you feel like maybe you've lost in this process. And how can we get you back into the driver's seat and being proactive and making power moves, not just making any old career move?
100%. I could not agree more with you on the idea of a dream job. And I always say your dream job doesn't exist. The sooner you realize that, the happier you'll be. Because I feel like part of the catalyst to my quarter life crisis was thinking that this job that I had been working so hard for and doing all of these things to get was going to solve my career problems. And what it ended up doing was actually creating more, because it led to like this identity crisis of, oh my God, I thought this is what I wanted. I worked so hard to get here. And now I actually hate everything about what I'm doing. And I feel like I wasted my time and I have to figure out how to get out of it. And if I had just never equated that much weight with my career, I feel like I wouldn't have had such a eye-opening, scary identity crisis experience. I do think, you know, to a degree, it's a little bit of a rite of passage. Like, it's something you learn on your own. People tell you all the time. You always think you're the exception. You learn it on your own time. And I don't think people can really interfere with that experience. It's like a canon event everyone in their 20s goes through. And I think Gen Z has a lot of resistance to this. Like, they just don't ever want to experience that, and they want to end the 9 to 5. And as a result, I feel like they end up in, at least what I've noticed, because I spend a lot of time on TikTok, they end up in these cycles that are just not positive, we'll say. I've talked about this on some other podcasts. If you are listening, to go listen to my one with Ediana Rosen. We talk about this a lot. But my career crisis was a result of thinking that a dream job existed. And I wish that I had thought about it in this way of looking for autonomy and purpose and relationships, because those really are the true catalyst to feeling satisfied at work. I think about the highlights of my corporate career, which there were a few, there weren't many, but there were a few, were the relationships that I built with my coworkers, who are still to this day some of my best friends, two of which weddings I'm attending this year. And then the ability to have autonomy in what I was doing within like a very curated environment, if that makes sense. Like, the times where I was least happy at work were the times where I was constantly being told what to do, or constantly felt like somebody was breathing down my neck. And I think that really leads to like hating your life every single day at work instead of finding that sort of neutral ground of, I like my job enough. This does what it needs to do for me. And I can spend the rest of my time, you know, pursuing hobbies, passions, interests, relationship, family, et cetera, outside of work. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I really, 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 really love that advice. And I think it very clearly articulated, because also too, on the topic of like, everybody's looking for these hard, tangible things, like what specific skills do I need to develop? What specific scripts do I need to follow? And it's like, it just sort of depends on your situation. And like some arbitrary person on the internet can't tell you that for you. You kind of have to figure it out as you go. I say, you know, act into knowledge. You don't learn if you don't do. So really, really yeah. good advice there. On the topic of advice, let's talk about some of the most important lessons you've learned, because, you know, obviously you spent some time working in a corporate setting, and also you are now like a CEO of your own company. You are your own boss. So what lessons have you learned in both facets of your career?
Oh, that's really good. I think one of the lessons is work hard first and smart later. I don't think, you know, there's a replacement for working hard, especially at the beginning of your career or when you first start building a business. So like for someone building a business, for example, I would give the advice of like, you know, work hard on setting up all your systems and make sure it's organized and like get your business bank account and all that kind of stuff. Another way you could look at this advice that I say a lot is like glitter and glue, where I'm like, glitter is like the really cool things that you get to tell someone at a cocktail party or put on your LinkedIn or Instagram, but the glue is like truly what holds the whole system together. And you could apply that to a career or building a business. Like building a business is just, I just talked about some of the things like your workflows, your systems in place. For your career, it could be the fact that like, do you know what you're doing? Are you good at your craft? Are you able to do this thing? And, you know, or do you have trouble following through? Do you have trouble with communication skills? You know, that kind of thing. So I think, I still think one of like a good lesson is, you know, yes, there's no replacement for working hard, and work hard now so that you can leverage it to work smarter later on. Cause I think if you want to accomplish anything meaningful, you have to start by working hard. I already mentioned, but like building storytelling skills is something I wish I had known earlier. The other thing I think is really important is to be a lifelong learner. For sure, if you are starting your own business, you are going to be learning all the time. It's going to be annoying because you're like, I don't have it in me to learn one more thing, but that's who you are. But even in the corporate careers today, you are always going to be constantly learning. So that's some other advice that I think I learned kind of just later on. A piece of advice that I actually hear a lot that I don't agree with is follow your passion. I really don't love the advice to follow your passion, because I think it puts too much pressure on people to turn like monetize what they're doing. You know, there is such a thing as finding a job that you're good at and you're successful with, and people will pay you, you know, a good amount of money to do it. And that might be the passion that drives you. It doesn't have to be this like diehard passion that you did and now you feel the need to monetize it. I think that is at least advice when I was first starting Career Contessa that I would get frustrated with was, always negotiate, because I was like, well, sometimes you get a really good offer and you shouldn't negotiate. You know, like there was a piece of context that was missing from that. And then the other piece of advice I was being told all the time when I first started Career Contessa was like, follow your passion. You know, if you follow your passion, you won't work a day in your life. And I just like, it's so misleading. It goes back to sort of like dream job type stuff. And I think all it did was put a lot of people in a position where companies got to take a lot of advantage of them. And they kind of felt like that was normal. And now I think we all are starting to realize we need to have a much healthier relationship with work. The last piece of advice I would say is, and I share this a lot, is if you can be anything at work, be invaluable, not indispensable. And that's kind of contradictory too, because people will often say, oh, be indispensable. It's like, but the indispensable person, we can't afford to lose you, versus the mindset of an invaluable person is we don't want to lose you. And you want to be able to be the person who, yeah. Think of like a soccer field where if you only know how to play goalie, you're only going to be the goalie. But if you're the goalie who understands what the forwards are doing and what these people are doing and what's going on the whole field, we can move you from the goalie position to defense, to being a forward, to, I don't know all the other names of the positions on the field. But the point being is, like, being invaluable allows us to say, where else can we put this person where they're going to go and create value for the organization? Indispensable is like, you're so good at your job, we can't really afford to lose you. So you don't get that momentum and that growth. And that's kind of one of those contradictory pieces of career advice where everyone's like, learn how to be indispensable. No. Be impactful and be invaluable.
Mm-hmm. I love that advice, because it also sort of ties back to that soft skill comment from earlier on. Because I agree. I think becoming like a subject matter expert almost can cannibalize your career opportunity, because it really does silo you down one very specific path. I think back to my prior role, right before I left my job, we had one guy on our team and he was so good at using this software called Anaplan. Like, he was the Anaplan guy, and that wasn't really his job. Like, he was responsible for other things, but he wasn't able to actually focus on those other things or grow outside of what he was doing with Anaplan, because he was the only guy who knew how to do that. And so for everything related to that, any fire drill, any issue that happened with the software, and this was like the financial data of the company, so it was important, it was always changing, everybody needed the information right away. Anytime something came up, it was like everything he was doing got pushed to the side and he had to focus on this Anaplan stuff. And it's like, sure, he's indispensable in the sense of he would never get laid off. He'd never get fired. Yeah. Like, they cannot lose him. The day he chooses to go to a different company will be a dark day. But like, if he ever wanted to do anything else, it would be a really difficult change to make. And I feel like that sometimes happens by accident.
It usually does.
A lack of like awareness or self-reflection of like, is what I'm doing every day moving the needle forward in the direction that I want to go in? Because sometimes too, you get work given to you. You don't really have necessarily a choice, but I think there's opportunities throughout the year generally with a manager or a teammate or someone on your team, depending on the situation, to bring it up.
Well, my best advice with that too is then become a teacher. The Anaplan guy should be teaching this to other people. He should not be the only guy that knows how to do that thing. So if you are the point person for something, start teaching other people how to use it. Record Loom tutorials. I love Loom. Record Loom tutorials of how to do it so other people start doing it. Look, that sounds like a very hard software, and I'm sure not a lot of people are going to volunteer to do it. But for that person, he needs to convince his manager that it's not good that he's the only person that knows how to do this, and then become, you know, it's like the top performer of the team, or like top performing teams, they always say it's not because of one top performer. It's because the team is really good at training each other, teaching each other, working together. So it's like, you don't want to be, to your point, the Anaplan guy. Like, what a good name for like, sounds like a tough, horrible software program to be the guy for. And like, we'll just use that as like an overarching term. You don't want to be the Anaplan guy.
100% agree, for more reasons than one. Okay, let's pivot quickly. I have one more question for you, and then we'll get into some like rapid fire kinds of questions here. Do you have tips for setting boundaries at work? Because sort of on that topic of having conversations with your manager, like bringing things up that maybe you don't feel comfortable doing, alongside this current world we now live in post-pandemic, where like everyone needs to be available 24/7 and talking to your manager can feel a little bit scary given people are getting laid off and like maybe not wanting to raise something because you don't want to lose your job. Like, do you have any tips for navigating those boundaries and how to maybe have some of the tougher conversations?
Yeah, I think a couple things I've learned about boundaries. First, it's that boundaries are for you, not for other people. So for example, when you say, I'm not answering emails after 5 p.m., you can't expect that no one's ever going to send you an email after 5 p.m. and be irritated if they send you an email after 5 p.m. The boundary is for you to say, I don't answer emails after 5 p.m. so I don't go online, or maybe I look at them, but I respond to them the next day and I schedule send them or whatever, right? Like, you have to remember that this is not an expectation that you can just like throw on other people. Just like you don't want 7 different people throwing their boundary on you, right? So boundaries are about you, not the other person. The other thing about setting boundaries that I really like is maybe have 1 or 2 that are really like hard boundaries and other ones that are a little bit softer. Because I think what happens with boundaries is people are very black and white about it. And truly the reality is boundaries are live in very much a gray zone of life. So you might have a hard boundary of like, look, I don't answer emails after or on the weekend, but my soft boundary is if there's an emergency, here's how to contact me, right? The other thing I really think that actually is very great, good thing to do about boundaries is set them before there's an issue. When there's an issue, now emotion is involved in the situation. So I love, like, for example, on Career Contessa, we have, as part of our free resources, we have something called a communication or a guide to working with me. And basically it's a communication guide where you and other people on your team basically say, here's how I like to be communicated. Here, like when this thing pops up, try communicating this way. And so you're really setting kind of these like guidelines or principles to how the team communicates. A lot of boundary setting can be part of that as well. So it's nice to kind of set some ground rules maybe before. Now, if you haven't done that already, maybe you go to your team. You're like, I want to do this team building thing where we all set this with each other. And then you're not going to do it perfect 100% of the time, but strive for 85% of the time that you guys communicate in that way. And when someone pushes the boundary another way, find a way to politely remind them, like, you know, I just wanted to let you know I got your message. I'm practicing this boundary, so I'll respond to you on Monday with it, you know, because it doesn't seem urgent or something like that. Find the language and the behavior that, you know, you're comfortable with. But I think, again, with setting boundaries, it's about you're going to have to repeat them more than once, you know, and let people know also, because we're not going to memorize your boundaries on day one either. And I find like, I really love like an FYI. So I'm an over communicator. That's who I am. Not everyone likes to be over communicated with though. So I have asked my team, or they've shared with me certain things, and we use Slack status updates and other stuff like that. And so there's almost like, because we've discussed it, it's like, I can still communicate in the way that's good for me. I need to be able to send you this thing, but I need you to know that I don't have this expectation that you respond right away and both people find a happy place. Whereas like some teams never talk about that. And then they're always irritated when their manager sends them an email at 5 o'clock, but give people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they don't expect you to get back to them until when it works for you too. So this is like the thing about boundaries, like I said, is like, it's very hard to give black and white advice about it or really concrete advice because it lives so much in a gray zone and depends on so many things. Yeah. But a couple practices, remember, boundaries are for you, not for other people. And then the second thing is, what are going to be your hard boundaries? And then what are going to be your soft boundaries? And, you know, every day is a new day. So do not beat yourself up if you are like, oh, they crossed my boundaries and I let it happen. I think the most frustrating for people is the person who lets the boundary cross multiple times, doesn't say anything, and then they freak out, you know, like no one appreciates that. So that's the, again, boundaries are for you. You need to speak up. You need to rejigger the line when it's starting to move.
100%. And I think too, on the boundaries that you set, you are the one responsible for enforcing them. And like, if you don't respect the boundaries that you set, you can't necessarily expect other people to respect them either. Which, yeah, I feel like was a hard lesson that I learned during that post or like COVID time where everyone was working from home. Like the communications at the time were like, don't worry about it if something comes up or you have to sign off or whatever and try not to work too late. But, oh, it's 5 o'clock. By the way, I need this by tomorrow. And I found like that, I found that happened a lot. And if I didn't put my foot down on like, actually, I have things that I'm doing after 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. or whatever, you know, changed every day, then those requests would have continued to come. Same with work applications on your phone. This was something that too I struggled with a lot, was I would have Teams on my phone and notifications on, and like I'd be taking a walk at lunch and I'd get a message, hey, Michaela, have a second. And then I'm out of my walk. I see it. And it's like, well, now my walk is ruined because I feel like I have to rush home to deal with this, when it's something that we could have dealt with in half an hour when I finished my walk and like came back in a fresh space. And then that leads to like this building resentment towards something that couldn't or could have not existed if you just stuck to the boundary. So I like too the idea of boundaries existing in gray, because I'm a very black and white person. And so I operate as like, it's either yes or it's no, and that's it. And so operating in the gray is something that I actively have to work towards, especially now having my own business and like drawing the line on what I will and will not do in most cases. Let's pivot here into some rapid fire questions. So rapid fire just means like a sentence or two. We don't have to have full answers, but not just one word. Because I know some people do one word rapid fire. So like yes or no's. Okay. Question number one, should I stick through a PIP or quit? And for anyone listening, a PIP is a performance plan.
I'm going to go with probably time to start looking for a new job. I have very rarely seen performance improvement plans go well. It will always be there.
Agree. And I think it changes the way that people perceive you at work. Yep. And the way your manager could treat you.
Yep.
Okay. Next is, I didn't get a raise and everyone else on my team did. What should I do?
Oh, well, I think you need to investigate that. When you investigate it too, I would ask some questions first about clarity around these raises. Did truly everyone get one? What was the percentage of a raise? Like, I need more information before I can just bottom line be like, yes, go negotiate one. And oftentimes, at least at certain companies, they have a system in place. So they might say, we give raises this percent to that percent. If you get less, if you get more, this is what it means. So you need to go ask some questions probably to your people team and your manager. And you might even ask them, if your closest colleague, ask them about it. Like, did they ask for the raise? How did it work?
100%. I think you should talk to your colleagues, close colleagues, about raises, salary, compensation, just to make sure you're on a level playing field. Next question. How do I ask for more PTO? Is this something I could negotiate?
Oh, that's a great one. Well, first, I would identify, like, what is your current PTO policy? And like, are you asking for more PTO because you've been there a really long time and they don't have that policy in place? Sometimes they have this policy in place. So it's like, you get more PTO when you've worked 5 years or, you know, whatever it is. So again, make sure you actually go there educated on like what the policies are. The next thing is, if they, let's say they don't have this policy and you're like, I really want to have another week of PTO, and I would go to your boss and say, I'd like to have 5 more days of PTO. What would that look like? And they might be able to say to you, well, great, you can take it, but it's going to be unpaid. Or, okay, if you want to have that, then let's negotiate like on some other rounds. I mean, what you don't want to do is get more PTO and then like lose something else that is more valuable to you potentially. So I think it's important to get clarity and have the conversation of like, what would it take for me to, for the company to give me 5 more days of PTO? So, you know, I don't think that's like, again, a blanket statement of like, you're not going to get it, but oftentimes people will be negotiating a salary raise, a this or a that, and they don't get it. And then the kind of the default is like, okay, well, I didn't get the salary, but then can you give me more PTO? So you might want to think about your strategy is like, is there anything else that you're trying to negotiate for as well? And this can kind of work into it, or is this truly like a one-off?
Next, thing? I love my job, but I'm not getting paid enough. What do I do?
Well, the first thing is to go out and do some market research. What is the pay for your job? Are you being paid the market rate, or are you being like severely underpaid? In that situation, if you love your job, maybe you do negotiate for more other freedoms, PTO, other benefits that mean a lot to you, right? If it comes down to, I cannot live on this amount, this is the market rate for what I do, then I know that you love your job, but you can negotiate for a raise. And if you don't get it, then it's time to look for something else. We're not magicians. We can't actually pull these things out of our hats. But, you know, if you do love your job, I think it's worth having the bigger conversation. But even if you love your job and you have a good relationship with your manager, go out and do your market research, because they might be severely underpaying you and they don't know that the market rate is actually more. And actually for them, it would cost more money to replace you. So the incentive is to give you the raise that you want. So you probably have a really good chance if you can also show that the market rate for this role has dramatically shifted.
What is an appropriate percent salary increase to ask for during a raise conversation?
Okay, so I interviewed the head of Nike's global compensation once, and he told me that asking for a raise for anything less than 10% is not worth someone's time because of the way they do salary increases. And you know what? I'm going to go with that because it's true. Like, there's like cost of living adjustments and this and that. And by the time you wiggle it all in, you know, I think he had mentioned that between 10 and 20%, I think 20% is a big raise. Like, personally, I've never asked for a 20% raise, but if I had the data to back it up, et cetera, I would feel differently about it. But I like 10%. I think you could start there and then always do your market research, because the number one question they're going to ask you if you are asking for to them a big raise is, where did you get those numbers? You know, so, you know, just again, know your stuff.
What is the most important thing to have on a resume?
Oh, your actionable bullet points, your quantitative takeaways, like tell me what you did. I'm so tired of reading responsibilities. I do not care that you manage the company's LinkedIn. I don't give a shit. I want to know, what did you do with the LinkedIn? Not to sound really mean, but I look at a ton of resumes and I'm like, we are still not getting through to people. We need impact. We need to know results and outcomes. That's what I want to see. I think that's the most important thing. And then, like, also, one thing I've kind of changed my tune on is, I used to think that you should kind of like tell us what you did, how you did it, and the outcome. In 2024, I'm changing this. You need to start with the outcome. So, grew the Instagram 30,000 people by doing this thing in this way, versus I grew the Instagram and da-da-da. Like, so start with your result versus ending with your result.
The last question here is, should I reach out to a recruiter on LinkedIn for a job I just applied for?
Absolutely. Yes. You should send your resume and kind of letter/email of interest to the recruiter. And if you can find someone at the company that works there that you could also send it to, if there's a hiring manager, I would also recommend doing that. I actually just gave this advice to a friend who was applying to a job at Pinterest, and the hiring manager got back to her the next day. So she applied online. She even had a referral, sent it in. And she said, should I send a note to the hiring manager? I said, absolutely, because it was in the job posting. And the hiring manager got back to her the next day and said, thanks so much. This looks great. I just forwarded it to the recruiter. So I feel like that's a reminder that you should always do it.
Agree. And I think that's kind of a controversial take, because I feel like a lot of people think that it makes them feel or look annoying. But I always think back to the times where, from an internal standpoint, where I was involved in the hiring process, and it's like they're always looking for references. They're looking to hear from people. There's so many applicants, it's hard to sort through. I think taking the step to sort of set yourself apart, get your name in front of someone, is really valuable, especially lately in a very competitive job market. So I think that's great advice. Okay, those are all of the rapid fire questions. And so thank you so much for coming on to the show. I think this was a lovely, very practical conversation. So I'm excited for everybody to hear it. Can you let the listeners know where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are at Career Contessa on all social media platforms. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, so please connect with me there. It's Lauren McGoodwin. The website is careercontessa.com. The podcast is Career Contessa. And my book is called Power Moves.
Lovely. Thank you so much for coming on.